This is Dusty Rhodes reporting for the Education Desk. Higher education has been devastated by the state's year-long budget impasse, which has cut university funding by more than 70%. They went most of the fiscal year without any state funding until April, when lawmakers approved a stopgap measure to give colleges and universities $600 million to sustain them through the summer. For now, the future doesn't look much brighter. When the legislature adjourned without passing a budget, higher education was barely being mentioned in floor debates. Instead, lawmakers were squabbling about how to fund elementary and secondary education. I checked in with two college presidents to see how they're weathering the budget chaos. First, Tim Killeen, president of the University of Illinois. Well, since we have very little time, let's just get right to the budget. So what have you told the MAP students who received grants last spring and students who are supposed to receive MAP grants in the fall?
Well, we've written a letter, when the MAP students were accepted that you've probably seen. That's pretty much what we've told them. Obviously, there's a statement in there that says that MAP funding is contingent upon state appropriations, and of course that's still questionable for the upcoming fall semester. As you know, there was stopgap support that covered the MAP funding through the first semester of FY16, so that's been taken care of. But we're still in this position where the state funding is uncertain. So we've been telling the students that.
Okay, so do you have any ballpark on your enrollment? I know that you can't tell for sure until 10 days into the school year, but do you have a feeling for?
Yeah. We've seen on our campuses, you've taken all together the three universities, about a 13% increase in applications, and I think the acceptances are running at a smaller number than that, but they're up. So we expect to see what we call summer melt, when people have second thoughts, perhaps, about where they're going to actually go. And so we're probably at a high watermark right now, but it's a very healthy high watermark for our fall enrollment. So things are looking good from that perspective. We're delighted to see that the participation of underrepresented minorities is significantly up. And, of course, we've been working towards that through altered recruitment strategies, and that's encouraging. So I'd say overall the enrollment picture for the University of Illinois is looking healthy right now.
A lot of people that I talked to complained that the flagship campus has a lot of international students, and they feel like Illinois students are not getting admitted because of, international students who can pay the full tuition. I realize that that's possibly not an accurate perception. Do you want to speak to that, though?
I could speak to that. That's one of the frequently asked questions that I think I've heard multiple times before. It's 3 out of every 4 undergraduates walking around the campus are Illinois natives. So we're not talking about massive shifts in the participation from foreign students and Illinois students. In fact, the number of Illinois students has gone up, and we're very pleased to see that. That doesn't mean that we're trying to depress the number of foreign students, but we're, because we provide a world-class education to them, and there's demand for that, and they add to the diversity and the student experience on campus. So I'm a strong believer that a diverse student body, is something to be celebrated. Obviously, we don't want the numbers to shift to the detriment of Illinois natives, and we've been working very hard to make sure that isn't the case. I think if you look at the 10 years to where we are, you can see a growth of the international students, but certainly in the last couple of years since I've been involved in participating, the number of international students are displacing qualified Illinois natives. That's just not true.
How many professors has the university system lost in the past year?
I don't know. I have that number in my mind, but are you talking about the whole system, or are you talking about
whatever you can answer handily.
Yeah. Well, this is where I think we are. We've recruited, we're still recruiting professors, and there's been at least over 50 recruitments in the last year, professors, faculty arriving. We've certainly lost somewhere below 20, I think, is the number.
The News Gazette had a story that said as of January, you had lost 22 tenure-track professors and that there were another 27 pending.
I don't really know where they get those numbers from or what pending really means there. We do retention efforts sometimes when professors get recruited away or at least offers, and that happens all the time because we've got great faculty. And I know that retention efforts are definitely up, and I think the number there is about 75%. So we're working hard to retain our top-flight faculty, but we had more arrivals than departures.
Okay. What's the status of the partnership with Carl?
Very healthy. It's going well. The Carl and the university have been collaborating on the very important Dean Select Search process, which is, I believe, culminating. And I know that's going well. That process is an important one, and I expect to see the an announcement at some point sooner rather than later on the founding dean of the College of Medicine, which is, of course, as you know, named the Carl Illinois College of Medicine. I had a wonderful meeting with CEO of Carl just about a month ago, and we were in close contact as well. So it's going very well. The curriculum committee has developed plans. The timeline that we've been working towards is on track. And, of course, we're actively engaged in philanthropic efforts as well.
Well, that brings up another topic, because at the State House, I see groups of, your counterparts from other institutions, and you go around and meet with legislators together, and you appear in front of committees together. But the U of I is kind of in a different situation than a lot of other universities, in that you've got more of a cushion financially. And I wonder if you ever worry about kind of the optics in this legislative atmosphere of hiring a dean for a medical school or simply appointing an interim executive associate dean, things that sound like, well, maybe that could wait until we're not in a crisis, because the legislature is going to make a decision on all the schools together. They're probably going to just ball you all together. Do you ever worry that that looks bad for the other universities?
We're working very closely with all the other universities. There are weekly conversations with my counterpart presidents, and we've written joint letters of advocacy. We've participated jointly. Not every university in the public university sector is in the same financial position. That's inherent in your question, of course, and that's all recognized. We're all sort of damaged, and increasingly so, with this prolonged budgetary impasse. And the University of Illinois is the biggest of the universities. As you know, we're roughly half of the total enrolled population in public higher education, and we have an annual budget that's in excess of about $5 billion. So we have a big financial flywheel, and we've also been very careful about stewardship and so forth. So I think we're just being very transparent one with another, and recognizing that we're in different situations. We need to continue to move forward with what I call principled decision-making, where our focus is on the student experience and the high-caliber class of education that we deliver. In terms of the search for a founding dean, I just want to remind you that the new School of Medicine is not going to be funded by state funding. It's funded by a combination of future tuition and also support from the Carl Hospital System to the tune of $100 million. And those dollars have already started to flow. So, and people do really have to read the small print on these things, because if it's not funded by the taxpayer base, I think it's unfair to be criticized as if it was funded by the taxpayer base. And we do have alternative sources of revenue that are pretty important, and we need to follow through on our commitments, both to our vendors but notably to our students. So we are certainly in a different position. I'm not sure I would use the word that you've used, cushion. I wouldn't use that. I would say we've got financial reserves that are encumbered and are transparently utilized. But we've certainly withstood the budgetary pressures of the last year to the best of our ability. But we've made during that period a number of significant steps in reducing administration, in moving resources from administration to the student experience, in deferring IT upgrade projects, and certainly facility enhancements. But we've done that in order to preserve the core mission, which is about student education and new knowledge creation in our research and development activities. We'll continue to work along those lines, whatever happens. But of course, we're also ramping up our advocacy efforts, particularly now that we're entering a second year of this budgetary impasse, which is really damaging, you know, for not just our university, but for the whole state in terms of economic development, human capital development, and the sort of trust and confidence in the overall state function. So we'll pay our part, as we have been all along, in advocating for public higher education. I'm not sure if I'm directly answering your question sufficiently, but that's what comes to my mind for the moment.
One more question, Dusty? Or?
Okay. Well, this would be a very nice question. You recently attended a year-end ceremony for a group of U of I students who are not ever going to receive degrees because they're incarcerated at Danville Correctional Center. You want to talk a minute about that? What was your impression of that?
In a way, I was inspired by meeting these students. I think of them as students. They're taking serious courses from the University of Illinois and obviously taking it seriously and working hard and doing their homework and delivering their project on time and under difficult circumstances for them. And I met with a large group, about 60 people. The director of the Illinois Correctional Division was there too. We had some good exchanges there. I think we're all educators. At least my job is to educate, and so we acknowledge the impetus on the part of everybody who's interested in bettering themselves through education, and very proud, in fact, of what I learned was the very low recidivism rate of incarcerated students who go through these programs, and so it pays off to provide these sorts of opportunities for the incarcerated population. And I certainly saw some very committed, there were men, of course, all men in this prison, who are committed to bettering themselves and furthering their education, and happy to see that we're providing opportunities along those lines.
That last program we discussed at Danville Correctional Center is the Education Justice Project. Illinois Edition listeners may remember hearing its founder, Rebecca Ginsburg, interviewed here recently. Now we're going to hear from Tom Ramage, who is just across town from Tim Killeen, but really sort of a world away. Ramage is the president of Parkland Community College. I just got off the phone with President Killeen. He mentioned that their budget is $5 billion. How in size does Parkland compare to UIUC?
From the student population side, we see, on average, about 20,000 students every year. Our budget for the year is right around $70 million. The undergraduate population, last I heard, is something like 40,000 students at the university, and their budget is $5 billion. But their mission is vastly different than ours, too. We have students for 2 years. We're teaching them, by and large, general education courses, as well as technical professional courses that allow them to go right to work. We don't have graduate students. We don't have a research mission. We don't have a statewide mission, certainly.
Basically, their budget has a B and yours has an M.
That's correct.
I asked him to quantify the funds he's missing from the state.
Parkland College counted on $5.1 million from the state of Illinois. This last year that we're about ready to finish up, we saw about $1.2 million. Going into this next fiscal year, I'm even more pessimistic. The tea leaves that I'm reading don't look very good.
What have you told your students about MAP grants?
For the fall semester, we've told our students that there would be no MAP grants that were reimbursed by the college. So in other words, if the state of Illinois was not paying in their MAP grants, they should not expect them from the college. So students start at the beginning of the year with no expectation that there would be any sort of state support. However, there was a stopgap funding. So that provided us a little over $500,000 that allowed us to cover the students' needs in the fall, this past fall, 2015. But that leaves the spring semester uncovered. So students at Parkland College have no MAP grants this spring semester, nor any real hope for MAP grants in the next year, at least at this moment.
I know you've downsized.
Yes. We shed about 50 people, some faculty, some staff, some administration. If we don't see at least half of our normal state funds coming in 17, that number will double.
It seems that lawmakers, they're juggling so many different concerns that higher education is often lumped all together as one thing.
But what may provide relief for a university does nothing for a community college. For example, the procurement question, that's worth, depending on who you talk to, millions of dollars across the town at the university, where it's virtually nothing at the community college. So when a legislature considers ways to help out higher ed, they're maybe not understanding the disparate impact on disparate institutions.
Do you feel like you're all in this together?
Some days we're all in it together, and some days we're not. And it depends on whose agenda is being pushed. So certainly, when it benefits us all, we speak with a unified voice. When it benefits the community college system, the community colleges speak for themselves, and the same with the universities. That's unfortunate, but given the position that we're all in, it's almost to the point of survival.